I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, I'll talk about two tragic news stories and what we don't seem to want to talk about. That's in my weekly Can I Just Tell You commentary. But first, if you've ever worn blue jeans, then this next story will probably be of interest to you. It turns out that behind that almost ubiquitous article of clothing is a story where past and present meet, where the worst of human behavior collides with the highest spiritual imagination. It's the story of the precious dye called indigo. A decade ago, author Catherine McKinley, armed with a fellowship and her utter fascination for the blue dye, embarked on a trip through 9 West African countries. While indigo traces its roots to India, the African slave trade made it exceedingly valuable on that continent. Catherine McKinley's quest to learn more about indigo led her to discover not only the history of this famous plant and dye, but also a piece of herself. She shares her journey in her book, Indigo, In Search of the Color That Seduced the World. And she's with us now. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
You start your book with a folktale about the origins of indigo. Would you read it for us?
Sure. In ancient times, when the heavens hung closer to the earth, there was a woman who lived in the land through which the Niger River flows. She felt a great loneliness for God and a hunger for beauty, beyond any beauty of the known world. She yearned for hair as blue as thunder, for cloth that was not simple white cotton. She wanted to become one with the sky. Now, in those times, bits of sky could be eaten, but eating the sky could be dangerous business. Her hunger was stronger than her fear for what she knew had been forbidden, and she devoured more and more until she became drunk with it. As punishment, God pulled the sky higher. With the heavens now so far above, and God even further, the people of the land and their children for generations to come, each filled with their own great hunger, were set on a trail of infinite desire. Their longing was made material in the bluest of God's blues, and garments dyed in indigo.
Beautiful. You know, the book makes the point that indigo at some point was as valuable as gold. It was one of the most important items of currency. So how did it become so precious?
Well, the dye itself, the indigo plant exists all over the world, but in Africa and India, it has a particular potency, and it was traded through the Saharan Desert into Europe. And because of its beauty, and it takes to every fiber, and it's indelible.
It's indelible.
Yes.
You have a very interesting family story, which is linked to indigo. Could you just briefly tell it?
Well, indigo is the color and the tartan of my Scotch-Irish ancestors. My biological family were Jewish rag traders and hadn't dealt in indigo in particular, but had a history of trade with Africa and the Caribbean. And then, of course, I have African slaves as ancestors, and they were traded most likely for indigo cloth on the coast of West Africa.
I'm not sure that everybody knows that that was one of the items for which humans were traded.
Yes. They say that indigo was more powerful than the gun because there was such a desire for indigo cloth that it was one of the main currencies in the African slave trade.
Well, you talk about the fact that the sails that powered Columbus's journey to the so-called New World were in fact indigo.
Yes.
Dyed indigo.
They were denim sails. And the original American flag was made from indigo textiles.
So it is literally woven into the fabric of this country.
Yes, very much so.
Why do you think you were so fascinated by it?
It was the beauty first, but when I started to really investigate the claws, particularly African claws, I realized that they also told stories, that the design work were kind of elaborate stories. And then the more I started to look into the history and realized it was an African women's history, and it was a history of wealth and power that contradicted everything that I'd kind of heard, or the popular story of African women.
One of the captivating stories in your book, or through lines of the book, is your encounter with and your friendship with a woman named Yorama. And she's kind of your indigo teacher.
Yes.
She teaches you about, like, the cloth, for example, have all these names.
Yes.
And could you just tell us what some of the names are? I found the names hilarious. Like, I'll just tell you some of my favorite. Your foot, my foot, or when my husband goes out, I go out.
Yes.
And then there's attending school does not mean one will be wise. Your head is not right. Is that it? Or your head is
Head is correct.
Your head is correct. That's another good one. What are some of yours?
Some of my favorites are, there was a cloth that I wanted to buy, and my friend Arama said, no, you can't buy that one. And they said, I said, but why? It's my favorite cloth. And she said, oh, because it means the white lady says, think about yourself.
Well, I hope you didn't buy it. What was your favorite? What was your favorite cloth?
My favorite is My Head is Correct. It's kind of, it's a beautiful pattern. And it also, it means that my destiny is good. The idea is that your soul or your destiny resides in your head.
And you write in the book, cloth is more than our bank account and our insurance. If you have 300 pieces of good cloth like a real madame, well, then you have something. A person's spirit is in their cloth.
Yes.
Explain that.
Well, cloth is the second layer above the skin. And they say that the skin and the spirit is caught in the cloth. And for West African women, the value of cloth only increased, whereas land values, currency values were always changing and slipping. And so most women stored it much like china or fine silverware.
Is that a custom that continues to this day?
It does.
To this day, I mean, a lot of women in this country, this is an archaic term, so so all the young women out there, please don't throw your shoes at the radio. But, okay, I'll just say it. When I was about to be married, I received a hope chest.
Yes.
And what you're supposed to put in, you know, your hope chest is the things that you will need as a married woman, like your jewelry, yes, your dishes, your linens, and things like that. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that African women have a cloth chest.
Yes. And usually they begin to collect the cloth at puberty or sometimes at birth. And they'll collect cloths up until marriage, but when they are about to marry, cloth is a big part of the dowry.
Mm. You say that you talk about that this is a way for women to gain wealth. Is it all women at Mama Benz, as in Mercedes Benz?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about them.
The Mama Benz are the cloth traders who have accrued enormous wealth through the trade of cloth. Many of them are illiterate women who worked in other kinds of trades in the market and slowly gained capital and then went into the cloth trade. And they're very, very powerful in the history of those women. They were able to influence politics to, in one case in Nigeria during the colonial era, Indigo dyers and other cloth traders came together and deposed a king and upset the colonial government. So I was fascinated with the idea of these kind of beautiful women who everybody speaks of as being disempowered. And in fact, that beauty in that cloth was their currency, and it was their way to make social change.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with author Catherine McKinley about her book, Indigo, In Search of the Color That Seduced the World. And so there's that story of empowerment. But, you know, the history of it, as you point out, is quite bloody. In fact,
yes,
you tell us about the India Rebellion, the Indigo Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
You said that at one point it was said that there was no crate of indigo that made it to the New World that was not smeared with blood.
Yes.
Why?
Absolutely.
Is that?
Because the indigo is so profitable that in the case of India, they forced people to cultivate indigo only, and it was being sent to Europe and traded with Europe. And so it was a bloody trade. They were literally standing on people and beating them to produce the dye.
And then, of course, there was the slave trade. What mm-hmm. what is the connection between indigo and the African slave trade? Is it mainly that that was one of the commodities for which slaves were traded? Or?
Yes. Yes. It's called one of the hidden half commodities of the slave trade. So it was used literally as a currency. And they were trading one length of cloth in exchange for one human body. Yeah.
Yes. And also it is the case that enslaved Africans carried the knowledge of the cultivation here.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
And it was a desirable crop here because why?
In the 1700s, when it was introduced in South Carolina, the profits outpaced the sugar and cotton. And in fact, at the time of the American Revolution, the dollar had no strength and indigo cakes were used as currency.
Why do you think that this history isn't better known? I mean, we still hear about, you know, the sugar and rum and cotton,
mm-hmm.
but you almost never hear about the role of indigo in the slave trade. And you certainly don't hear about that in the role of kind of the relationships between, you know, India and Europe and so forth. Why do you think mm-hmm. this history has kind of... Well, you've revived it, but why mm-hmm. do you think we don't know more about it?
I think some of it is that it literally disappeared. It was supplanted by chemical dyes, and it was kind of wiped off of, not off the palate, because we certainly enjoy blue jeans and other things, but the actual dye stuff disappeared. It collapsed relatively quickly. So the profits were very large, but by the 1800s, it had disappeared here in the States.
So is most of the jeans that we all wear...
Mm-hmm.
Is that all synthetic dye?
It is. They're all chemical dyes, except for you can go to Barney's and you can buy fancy, you know, $600 jeans that are done with real organic indigo.
But in West Africa, where you visited, mm-hmm. is that synthetic dye or is that still the real stuff?
For the
stuff
most part, it's synthetic dye. Most people, because the dye process is very involved, it's very expensive, and there isn't the same, people don't value it in the same way. They talk about it as, oh, this is kolo. This is from the colonial era. This is something that we don't like so much anymore. It's something of our grandparents.
But the designs still live.
Many of the designs still live, certainly. And ironically, a lot of them are being printed in India and China.
What? Wait. Say they're being printed in India and China and then exported to Africa.
The Dutch trade was very, very important. And now the Dutch companies that have enjoyed all these profits with Africa for years are talking about Chinese agents who are now going into the deepest parts of various countries, learning local trade languages, and they're outpacing the Dutch companies by 70% in sales.
What do people in Africa think about this? What are they? Not, obviously, Africa is a continent, not a country, but I mean, in the countries in which indigo is such a big part of the culture and that these indigo dyed fabrics are such a big part of the culture, how do people feel about that?
Well, one of the myths is that Africa is steeped in tradition. Africa won't break from tradition, but particularly in relation to clothes and other kinds of commodities, people are always looking for what's current. They are in love with modernity, and they have as ferocious a fashion trade as, you know, the couture houses.
So it's all good as long as it's hot.
Yeah,
it's all good.
Exactly.
Do you still love it?
I still love it. I absolutely love it. I go to it all the time. It's soothing. The scent of it is intoxicating. It's just something that I love having around.
And what about yourself? What do you think that you learned about yourself?
I learned a lot. Primarily, I learned about the value of life. Indigo is a cloth that's used to celebrate birth and love, but it's also used in mourning. And so I learned through looking at the dye pot and how cloth is used and worn, really the value of life and how the color represents life and represents people's... In Ghana, they say, you love life. And I think that that was really the lesson of the indigo dye pot.
And when the rest of us who don't have your very personal relationship with indigo, although in fact the point that the book makes is that we actually, all of us who are American, have a very personal, not just American, but really many people around the world have a very intimate relationship with indigo, whether they know it or not.
Yes.
What would you like those of us, people who, when we see a piece of indigo here on out, what would you like us to see?
I think, again, to see how it reflects our very complicated history and also how it reflects our relationship to the world. It's really like it's the ultimate story of globalization. You know, we talk a lot about globalization like it's this new thing, but it reaches back into, you know, the 1200s and earlier. And so we've had this kind of wonderful, Africa is so much a part of us, even though it's a place where we act like we're so distant from.
Catherine McKinley is the author of Indigo, In Search of the Color That Seduced the World. She was kind enough to join us from our studios in Washington, D.C. Catherine McKinley, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.